We've seen a storm of executive orders coming through the White House this past couple of weeks, and yet somehow covering what's going on feels a little bit calmer this year. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us each and every week wherever you find good podcasts at US of Ed, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. Joe Biden keeping his signing hand busy this week. More executive orders pouring across the desk. Three in particular looking at reversing immigration policies of the Trump administration and creating a task force to reunite children with those parents, those families that were separated because of family separation policies. What are we looking at, Ed?
Well, my family doesn't want me back. this is getting back to good government. Penalizing people, terrorizing people is not what the United States is all about, and nor should it be. So Biden, as he said yesterday, I'm not doing any governing yet. I'm just trying to get to the point where I can, where the government is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. So what he's doing, and I think he has 15 now or more executive orders that put government back to the way it was in Bush. There's nothing really big or new here. Forget about Obama. He's not stretched that far, except in the immigration case. All the rest of the stuff is stuff that Bush would have signed or did sign.
There was one last week, actually. Biden signed an executive order to increase American manufacturing, this Buy American order. And it's my understanding Trump, he signed a pretty similar executive order at one point, but it didn't really come to anything. We've spoken at length about the downfall of American manufacturing. This is a systemic issue. Is an executive order really going to do much in that area?
Well, let's say it's half cosmetic. It makes people feel better. It'll certainly make some investors feel better. What brings manufacturing back, as we all know, in Australia and the United States, is the cost of making the good. Now, costs have gone up, and they're going up in China, too. So I think there's a good chance that people who are original manufacturers in the United States, like making automobiles, General Motors, Ford, and so forth, will abandon some of their plants outside the United States if the climate is good to manufacture in America. But for the most part, I think the entire Western world has to look beyond manufacturing. China is not able to manufacture in their own country anymore. They have to send stuff to Africa and to Bangladesh and to India. India is becoming a primary manufacturer, and that's raising living in those countries. So I think a new formula has to come into place. We're going to see more kind of movements and putting Silicon Valley type factories into small towns in America. That is where the machine makes most of the product, not the person. But they'll have some good jobs associated with those machine-making jobs, as Germany has done.
Biden had a call this week with Russian President Vladimir Putin, and he was a little cagey in a press briefing on just what they discussed. Ed, you've been in the room during calls like this one, previous presidents and the like. What do you think Biden and Mr. Putin had to speak about?
Well, to be clear, I wasn't in the room, but I was on the line. These are scripted phone calls where the president has a script, and this president's script was about the dissident returning, about the normalization of relations, about the START treaty on missiles and the like, and Biden being firm, not wishy-washy or pushing and footing about what the United States wants. We have an interesting situation now in Russia. All of a sudden, the Russian people are standing up. And I think the reason for that is that Biden is clearly a person who will stand up with them. So part of that conversation was about United States is not your friend. We're not your enemy. But if you do things that endanger democracy, watch out. We're coming after you. And we carry a big stick.
Yeah, we should also mention that the Russian opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, has been arrested since returning to Russia after that poisoning attempt on his life. And the White House have said they're deeply concerned over this matter. I mean, Ed, what is it that Navalny actually has that Putin is so afraid of?
Followers. He has followers, probably in the millions. And Putin doesn't want to have anyone in the race that could challenge him. Putin, unlike Trump, is declaring victory before the race starts. And so the more you have the color of someone who could possibly defeat you in an election, the more you have to move against it. Putin is scared now, because if he has a real challenger, he would lose.
When it comes to COVID vaccinations, obviously this is one the Biden administration inherited from the Trump administration, but vaccines still, we seem to be very much up in the air in terms of what is to be done.
Yes, that's true. When you inherit a non-system with a lot of promises, filling the promises has to be part of what you do, but the promises were not the right promises at the right time to do the right thing. So now they're scrambling. It's pretty clear they're scrambling. Today we learn a number of pharmacies will be able to give out the drugs. This has been thought through on the fly. Earlier we heard about armories and FEMA involvement. There's no doubt vaccines are needed and they're gonna go out, but the supply chain is not in place yet, and they're scrambling. They just have to admit it. Mm. We are scrambling. We're doing our best in a bad situation. They'll get it right. It'll be take a few weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, and then this will all be stood up, and people are criticizing them for not getting 2 vaccines or 3, or the mutation was bigger than we thought. This is not a game that's going to end soon.
On COVID relief, Democrats have been tossing out different packages, Republicans refusing to come to the table and even really debate these ones. So Dems are now pushing through a $1.9 trillion package through budget reconciliation. This method lowers the voting bar and avoids Republicans killing it using filibustering, and Mitch McConnell has criticized Biden for lacking bipartisanship with the move, in spite of the fact McConnell used the same method to push through Republicans' big end-of-town tax cuts in 2017. Any thoughts, Ed?
Ed, too, Rutai. Look, didn't McConnell say there's a consequence to victory? The Republicans are facing the consequences of what they did. They used the same tactic to get through this massive tax relief bill that has stripped the Treasury and our grandkids and their grandkids of tax money. So they're borrowing from a future that's going to be very scarce. I agree with the Republicans that this is going to be a huge bill, but I also am much more sympathetic with the Democrats, is this is something that has to be done. Only bold measures will work. FDR had a war to get the country out of debt and out of economic malaise. The war here has to be on the Treasury and pumping as much money out as possible, as soon as possible, to get things going. there will be enormous mismanagement here. Let's face it. There'll be investments in companies that never should have been invested in. There'll be small businesses that open up just to get the cash. We know all that. But the most important thing for the Democrats is to show they can get something done.
Just on filibusters, this latest has brought up the debate again of ending the filibuster permanently. Now, for those who don't know, filibustering is the practice of delaying or blocking a vote with endless or meaningless debate in the Senate just by standing up doing this kind of stream of consciousness ramble for as long as you can hold out. And it's kind of this bizarre and weirdly almost beloved in some circles tactic in American politics. I mean, anytime I hear filibuster, I think of Mr. Smith goes to Washington. I think of Jimmy Stewart sort of thing. Ed, what do you think of as the pros and cons of ending the filibuster?
Well, the filibuster has really helped Black Americans. There have been atrocious bills, voting rights bills, and things like this, or anti-voting rights bills, put up by in the old days, the Democrats. They were the segregationists, and Republicans filibustered those bills because they didn't have enough votes in the lower house. So the filibuster has actually been an aid to the most irresponsible legislation around. I think they should modify this filibuster, and I'm not sure how. That probably takes a whole show. Mm. But people have talked about something where there have to be five people on each side demanding reconciliation or something like that. So you have to get five Democrats voting with Republicans and five Democrats voting with Democrat, whatever. Anyway, it take 10 people to sign up to end debate on an issue. And if you kill the filibuster, somebody is going to say that was the wrong thing to do when an urgent issue like abortion comes up.
Well, filibustering, kind of like American democracy as a whole. It's not perfect, but it's what we've got.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Look, unfortunately, we will talk Trump in a moment, but first I want to talk about the new Trumps, or at least a couple of people that seem to be trying to be the new Trump. Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Republican rep from Georgia, she's been getting a lot of press for saying things like Jewish space lasers started the California wildfires and claiming that Sandy Hook was a false flag operation. Now, she's been roundly criticised by both sides of the table, and Dems have a motion to strip her from committee assignments. But, Ed, with Green, is she a distraction, as Mitch McConnell says, or is she the future face of the Republican Party?
She's not the future face of the Republican Party, but she's doing the damage that Trump can't do on the inside. She's representing him on the inside of the party, threatening, belittling, and telling Republicans, I will make sure there's a candidate against you in your primary election who's from my faction. This has happened before, and the Republicans suffered mightily for it. A decade ago, when they had another group that was fiscal conservatives, and it drove the Republican Party crazy. But these people were not conspiracy theorists. They were actually fiscal monitors. I think here we have something very different in that Donald Trump has decided to be with her. The only way to deal with her is to cut her legs off. And that's exactly what the Republicans should do. If they give any air to this, it makes Trump stronger. And what they need to do is get rid of Trump any way they can so they can build back their party.
And just before I move on, Ted Cruz has been nakedly trying to garner Trump supporters since Trump was outed. But his methods seem to be bizarre even for him, claiming the Paris Agreement had something to do with the citizens of Paris, this week linking fears of eco-terrorists to comic book movies. He seems to be focusing on the tell outrageous lies aspect of Trump without sort of looking for where those lies actually lead to political gain. What do you make of the new face of Ted Cruz?
He's dancing in the dark. He doesn't know where to strike out. He wants to be important. His problem is one of wanting to be somebody and nobody wants him. Have you ever been in a class with one of these guys who thinks he's important and nobody else in the class thinks he's important, so then he does outrageous things to gain attention? That's Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz has no following, and all of his outrageous remarks are not gaining him a following. Howley is more dangerous because Howley's a bit appealing, he's intelligent, but Cruz has none of that. No one in the Senate likes him. Most of his constituents don't like him. Cruz knows this is it for him. These may be his last days. And he's looking for the possibility of running for a president. If there's a Republican run for president, it's Marco Rubio, who said the president, Trump was a nut. He got to be president. He's still a nut. I like some of his ideas, but I'm not going along with all of it. I respect you, Mr. Trump. Rubio is the one in the moderate Republicans who like Trump ideas, but not Trump. We'll move ahead.
We better move off this one before I start feeling sorry for Ted Cruz. I mean, God forbid.
God forbid, for sure.
We are back on Trump. Impeachment, Ed. This week, the former president abandoned by members of his legal team, and it's looking hard to believe he can even mount a coherent defense. What's going on?
Well, that you've got it all right there. His defense is two things. Now he's gotten rid of the idea that his defense could be that he won the election. He's now gone to, I'm out of office, or he's up to his attorneys. He's out of office, so you cannot constitutionally prosecute him. Boy, if that were true, the only thing you'd have to do is burn down the White House and kill a couple hundred thousand people and resign. And he'd be free. That's just ridiculous. If every burglar who burgled someplace said, oh, gee, I surrender, you're going to let him go? No, of course not. His other line of defense is free speech. And the best line there, I think, comes from Supreme Court Justice Douglas, when he said, you cannot yell fire in a crowded theater. Your free speech is protected until it endangers the lives and livelihood of others. If you're only endangering an idea, it's free. If you're doing people or property, it is not. And I don't care if you're Antifa or Trump. There is no defense there. When actions taken harm others.
And yet when we come to a vote, it seems like Republicans are continuing to defend what's left of Trump's legacy.
Yeah, because they are seeing this as, if I don't vote for him, my constituents are going to punish me, or I was backing the wrong horse for too long and I look stupid. What I don't understand why the Republicans didn't offer to use the 14th Amendment that says an insurrectionist may be stripped of his ability to run for public office. And it only takes a majority vote to do that. They could have cuddled up to a couple of Democrats and say, you put it up and we will not vote against it. And if we did vote against it, Harris would put in the tie-breaking vote, and it's done. Mm. And our hands are clean. They really need me in Washington.
Could agree more, mate, but I'm glad we've got you here. Just finally, Ed, the United States in for 6 more weeks of winter. Puck Stawny Phil, perhaps the world's most influential groundhog, has seen his shadow and predicted as much. Geez, the position they're in, can the U.S. handle it?
Well, it'll keep people indoors. That's one advantage. The U.S. has had one disaster after another in these snowstorms. For some, it's a good thing, these snowstorms and the additional rain in California. That'll be good for the country. The snowstorms may also slow down people getting in their cars, running to get vaccinated, and allow the vaccination centers to using drugstores and other things, pharmacies, to get into their neighborhoods and doing door-to-door things. I think things do need to slow down. Everything but our loose commutation needs to slow down, just like Mr. Biden wants it to.
Ed and I will be back next week. Barring, of course, another executive order that tells us to stop, you can find us wherever you find good podcasts at US of Ed, as well as under that name on Facebook and Twitter. If you're feeling generous, maybe drop us a review or even tell a friend.